Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to After Midnight with the Midnight Bomber and Captain B2. And Captain B2 has a con this evening, poured out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking a proliferous journey to prefer the empathetic masses, calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, but if for a moment increase, then cease them, quell their influence, let them not commit treason. And here we are again this week, and we're going to finish up all the wonderful poetry that we didn't get to finish last week for my anniversary contest. And Pam, are you out there? Are you my co-pilot tonight?
I am here. How are you, Bobby?
I'm doing all right so far, and especially since I'm not alone. I hate flying solo.
Right. Well, you know, it's not easy doing a show alone, especially, even if you know how, if you run the phone yourself like I do, you still want somebody to keep you company. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do. And speaking of phones, do we have anyone sitting out there waiting?
We do, yes, and we have Afaziana. Welcome, Afaziana.
Oh.
Glad you could join us.
Afazi.
Hi, Bobby.
Hey, thank you for joining us, girlfriend.
My pleasure.
Right, and we have Pam, and we have me, and we know you cannot get on the phone about you. Yeah, you hear him back down there? I'm getting back talk from my cat. You hear him? No, this is not for cats. Okay. Anyway, so you're running the boards for me tonight. Bless your heart and soul, girlfriend. I'll buy you coffee, but it would get cold by the time I got there.
All right. Well, I do have news for you. We are not doing the carryovers from your anniversary show.
Gasp, she said. So what are we doing?
Yes, we are going to do the surrealist digital art of Akut Adogadis.
Okay.
Yes.
We can do that too. Alrighty.
All right, that's good because there is no marked carryovers. I mean, I know there was carryovers, but...
Yeah.
Because I don't know what they are, we're going to go with the show where I know kind of what's going on.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That makes it a real challenge.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, no,
oh, and we have Naomi on hold, too. So,
no kidding.
Welcome, Naomi. Now, Naomi, do you know that you called in on your regular phone instead of your 111 phone?
Oh, I did? Oh, whoops. Okay.
You did. You want to hang up and call back?
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
All right.
Bye.
See you shortly.
That was short.
Well, what is it? Naomi's in Canada, and she usually calls, like, from a 111 number, which is more like a cheaper free call. But and
yeah,
if she calls on her regular cell phone, it costs her more with the
plan. Oh, I know. I have friends that live in Kanata, in Ontario, and they call so seldom because it is the, you know, you think that as close as Canada is, you know, we're the same continent, that it'd be a little
bit
cheaper.
Still long distance.
It depends on the
right?
plan, though. I'm Canadian. I have a plan. It's unlimited per month because I was spending too much on this on doing the blog talk
right.
show. So I just It's. I think it's $30 for unlimited a month, which is way cheaper than if I was paying per call.
Oh, exactly.
Well, that explains why my friend doesn't have it, because she's cheap.
Yeah. You might have to later on let Naomi know what plan you use, because she might want to consider using the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But welcome back, Naomi. Glad you could be here.
Yeah. Hello. What was that about
welcome
the plan?
To Midnight Poets. Yeah. Welcome to Midnight Poets and Telecommunications Consultants. Okay. Well, bless your heart, Pam, for landing on your feet on this one. So, you know, we'll share into that. Yeah, that way I can finish up my comments and hopefully get the judging out on that this week. Because I really don't like to put comments or judging out there until we have a reading up on them. So,
oh, I understand
alrighty,
that.
So, yeah. So let's go ahead and fire away. And we got four people reading tonight. Hot damn.
I know. That's awesome. All right.
It is.
Well, we're going to go ahead and start out with Her Husband's Head by Vicki Moore. And Afaziana, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Her Husband's Head by Vicki Moore. Such a lovely young lady, smooth skin and spray of freckles. Her dark hair is almost obscured by the white doves and roses surrounding her as she sits down to eat in her wedding dress. Her dress is tainted by a small blood stain, and her eyes are cold and hard. Her only imperfection, other than her husband's head sitting on her plate. And
great read. Great read. Okay. Well, Naomi, you get to start off the commenting.
I really like this. Her dress is tainted by a small blood stain. And her husband's head sitting on her plate at the end. This is very descriptive and amazing imagery all throughout. I'd like to see the prompt there. I don't...
Oh, yes. Well,
yeah,
I'll put the link for the contest. I'll put that out on the board so everyone will have it handy. But the prompt is actually the first one. And it's a lovely young woman,
yeah,
with gloves around her head and a man's head on her plate with roses around it. So
I see it there, yeah. Yeah, it's a lovely take on the prompt there. Wonderful description of the image. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for the comment. And Pam, what did you think of this piece?
I thought this was really well done. It was an excellent brevity with a kind of great dark humor. And I think what made it particularly appealing is the fact that you didn't really know, other than if you had seen the image by reading the poem itself, that there was anything dark about it until you got to her dress is tainted by a small blood stain. And then it just went from there. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I just found it clever and amusing. Just, well, you know what it is? It's just, she says it so straightforward. Like, once she gets to the end, it really hits you hard. Her only imperfection, other than her husband's head sitting on her plate. And you're going, oh, my
by the way.
So very clever,
yeah,
very well done.
Thank you. Great comment. Yeah, you're right. It's like an oh, by the way. You know? Yeah. Daisy, what did you think of this piece that you read?
I really enjoyed it. I thought at the beginning the descriptions were beautiful, like her spray of freckles. And I particularly like that because it could also be a spray of blood later on. But the spray of freckles actually really describes the beautiful freckles that the woman has. And then the subtleties in, like, you know, it's gently describing this beautiful image until the end, which she actually makes it sound like it might be a little bit more gruesome than it is in the photo, because it's not very bloody considering the fact that, you know, it's a head on a plate. It is a beautiful image, and I feel like here it really touches at the kind of metaphorical head on a plate, like he belongs to her now and she will have him, kind of thing. But it's just it's so subtle in the beginning, and then it hits you. And I feel like that's also the same of the image. If you start at the top and then you kind of scroll down, it's like, oh, that's not quite what I was expecting from that. You know, this beautiful woman and the doves, and then you look down and there's a head. I think that the poem matched the tone of the image perfectly.
I agree. I remember when I was looking for images and I found this and I scrolled down, I went, that's sudden. You're right. As you're scrolling down the picture, it takes you quite by surprise. She looks very non-flustered. She's just very calm. And you've got this disembodied head on a plate surrounded by flowers, which and her fingering her fork with the little blood stain on her dress. So yeah, I agree with everyone that this is it is a subtle poem to match a subtle prompt. So I think she nailed it straight on, especially with her very matter-of-fact tone. So great piece. What have you got next for us?
All right. Up next, we have Silver Plated Groom by Kel Smiles. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, if my cat will shut up here. Okay, Silver Plated Groom. Okay. I said I wanted his plate, his head on a plate, gleaming silver platter flatware on the edges of white napkins to match my gown glamorous. What did he do, you might wonder? Appearances deceive. He's a bounder. Well, he was, not any longer. I see a groom. He stood vows, he decreed. But therein lies the lies he would tell, attended by friends, a party to revel. Hotel room of hookers and men, overheard later he took one to bed. His pals talked of the fun he had, a few lines of coke one had to add. I didn't hear he took two to bed, or he crashed as soon as he did. Two doves whispered in my ear the truth of the night made clear, as I looked on an astounded stare, round the reception turned a glare. Shout at my maids, what did you do? Mistook my words as anger grew. I said, make him feel his mistake, not literally his head on a plate. Besides, dumb bitch, look at this. You got blood on my fancy dress. Now I can't possibly use it again. You know, it cost me a fortune. Looking on, eyes open.
Great read. Great read. Oh, my goodness gracious. Pam, would you like to start the comment?
Yeah, first of all, Naomi did a great read of that. And, this flowed really nicely. And I like how it was a tale of misunderstanding, which really added to the humor of it. Wonderful use of imagery. And I like how she goes about telling us, you know, right away she says, I said I wanted his head on a plate. And then she goes through all these different, the story of how he was, you know, chasing skirt and doing coke and really just, you know, pissing her off. And then that last part where it turns out the maid just took it literally, and then it's like, oh, my God, you messed up my dress, and you know this is going to cost me a fortune. So really, really just another clever dark write on the same prompt, and I love to see people's different approaches to the same picture. So very cool and very well done.
So do I. I enjoy also different reads on the same artwork or quotes. And you're right. She does a great job of rhyming. The format's wonderful. The storytelling is superb. I mean, gets you right from the beginning and drags you all the way through the very end. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. What a twist on the ending. I also liked it. Faziana, what did you think of this piece?
I liked it. I like that it was the bridesmaids taking it too seriously, and you know the bride doesn't seem all that upset about her partner dying. It's more about the like, oh, you like that's not what I actually meant. Like it's the frustration of like you idiots, but it's not so much grief about the man who she was actually really upset with, so she didn't have murderous intention. I like that it included that anger about the dress, because she does have the blood on her in the image, and she does have kind of that stone cold look about her, and so I feel like this captures the darker side of things. It's definitely a darker take than the first one that we read, but I quite enjoy the twist of it being like, I didn't mean it literally. I think that's really great.
That is definitely a careful what you wish for moment. And Naomi, you read this. What were your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I found it hilarious. Cal did an astounding job on this, right? It's like Ephesiana said there, the mistake there. I said make him feel his mistake, not literally his head on a plate. That made me laugh right there. And then getting her, she's more upset with her fancy dress than she is with the seeing the head of her husband on a plate. Just a great write all throughout.
Got some beautiful music playing in the background.
Not me.
Trying to figure out if it's me. I hope it's not. It is. I apologize. Oh, I think it is me. Hang on a second. And where this is. Yeah,
yes,
it's me. Sorry about that. Well, you all got a little a bit of Toto there. I'm sorry. I don't know how they got started. Gee whiz. Sabotaging.
I didn't even hear it.
Fortunately, it wasn't one of their noisier pieces. So, okay, well, sorry about the interruption. So let's go ahead and see what we got next to read.
All right, let me go ahead and grab the next one. And
EJ. I'm sorry, we've got EJ sitting out on the board with us.
Oh, Emma
cool.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's good to see her. She was hanging out on the board on the last show, too. So very good to see her. And
great to see her.
Up next,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have Marty Feldman-eyed parentheses by Intimidus Rex. And Bobby, go ahead and give that a read.
Well, I was just going to jump on this one here. Okay. Marty Feldman-eyed parentheses. Purple haze raindrops and whiskey aromas. Drive-in jive joints with barflies and comas. Seraglios see the sound in phonetical craze as this acid queen drains you into her next phase. I ate those verbs that you'd sputtered in kamikaze freestyle, free fall, machine guns ablaze amid that rice paper parachutes falling, now splattered in Marty Feldman eyed parentheses. That long drawn of smoking hashed hookah homilies melting an Elvis curl of slurred kernel lips, chastising that broken stiletto and her wingless poker face plant. This black lace booty and long legged jigger tells the tale of a little dress swigger, stewing in the volume of one's own bath salts, now all alone in her stooling assaults. End the poem. Does anyone not know who Marty Feldman is?
No, I don't.
Okay. You ever seen Young Frankenstein, the film?
Nope. Sorry.
Okay, well, and it's an obscure reference. If you ever get to see it, he's the one that plays Igor, or I should say Igor. He has
okay.
Very ugly eyes, like almost like frog eyes. So that's why he's making.
Okay.
All righty. Tell me, what did you think of the piece?
Did you say me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Rex always has this unique way about his writing. I just admire his writing. He's just so so unique in his the way he pulls these words together to this imagery flies through your head, you know. She ate those verbs that you sputtered in kamikaze, free fall, machine guns ablaze, amid the rice paper parachutes failing. I don't know his thought process when he writes, but my gracious, it must be like helter-skelter in that brain. It's just so wonderful the way he just flies these words. Like, it seems so effortlessly across the page, and it's just marvelous. You know, you end up with just something so marvelous. And, this is just stunning, right? All the way through. I just love this.
Great comment. Asiana, what did you think of A Wretch's Peace?
I think it has a surreal quality that fits the art perfectly. I mean, even when it says acid queen drains you into her next phase, that the acid is the key word there. I really enjoyed the I ate those verbs that you sputtered. And the whole thing is just so full of personality that just screams Rex. And then I had forgotten who Marty Feldman is, so I looked it up, and I recognized him immediately when I saw the picture. So I can see the reference to his eyes.
Yes. Yeah. When I posted that picture for that prompt, I was wondering what kind of reaction I was going to get. I should have known Rex would have grabbed that one. What did you think of Rex, Pam? Great comment, Asiana. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was definitely very clever. I have to agree with Asiana. It definitely has a real surreal vibe to it. I like that the Acid Queen reflects how the whole image itself, like it's almost like an acid trip. Yeah. But it also, I think, it makes a reference to Tina Turner's the Acid Queen character that she played.
Yes.
I did like the Mark Feldman
yeah.
reference. And I liked that second stanza where it really seemed about putting yourself over the edge for another person, like basically killing yourself off, maybe not literally, but like in a kind of a way that you lose yourself just to get someone's attention. I felt especially near the end, there was this kind of dark, twisted humor, especially in volumes of One's Own Basalt, Now All Alone in Her Stooling Assaults. You know, I felt there was, you know, kind of this duality of within those lines, you know, of the stool you make everybody sit on and you know, the bowel movements that come out after soaking in the bath salts. There was really, to me, it was humorous, but at the same time, it was dark too, because it felt kind of like how you might picture somebody's body reacting when they become so relaxed from overdosing. You know, I really liked this all the way through, but you know, he has always such wonderful use of imagery. He has a way of phrasing things that's all his own. And as always, I really like how he makes his stanzas kind of move about in shape. So excellent write and very well done.
Right, that the there is movement in the piece, especially the second stanza, which looks like it is in free fall, going off the edge of that that third stanza, and the celebrity references. The Elvis slur of curl carnal lips, the Acid Queen comment too, like the character she played in the rock opera Tommy, and the little sneaky scatological double entendre in that last stanza is quite the whole thing is quite clever, and he does have his own way about him, but as do you, Pam. You have quite the gift with metaphor.
Great comments, everybody.
So let's move on to the next piece.
All right. Up next, we have Tipsy by Nature, Nature's Paintbrush by Randa Yazari. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. The breath of the wood enticing senses, the mystic resinous odor of pine needles blending with the perfume of the delicate braids of untamed grapes, wealthy hills jeweled with creeping flocks filling the air with a heavenly scent that rivaled lilacs, smirking silk creek ushering in that magical floating memories, the blanketing sun peering over through a blue visible sky, circling her head like a golden crown, the shades of the bright costumes of trees with fleshy leaves, waving softly in the breeze, dancing a slow waltz, standing in stark contrast against the showy wildflowers, sprinkling the woods carpet, shaped and colored by a skillful artist, wakened after a tough writer winter to welcome the approaching summer season, the fiery pathos of passion spilling gracefully, pulse beat 100 to the minute, murmuring ethereal songs and beckoning a new taste of life and poem.
Great read, Pam. Very nice. So, and this is, the prompt is a picture of a young woman with flowers over her face, draped over her face. And if you look very subtly, you can see little drops of blood behind them. She's quite lovely, and she has flowers all over her face. So, Faziana, what did you think of this piece?
I really liked wealthy hills jeweled with creeping flocks filling the air with a heavenly scent that rivaled lilacs. The idea of hills being jeweled, like they're like the flowers are jewelry, is really interesting. That it's almost like they are the makeup of the natural world, and then here they are kind of serving as makeup for her. But it's a deadly kind of beauty, you know. It's like in order to have this beauty, she's hurt by it, and you kind of see that in the fiery pathos of passion spilling gracefully, because you know the fieriness can be a good thing, but even though it's spilling gracefully out of her, the beckoning a new taste of life. It has a positive spin, but maybe because I've seen the image, I kind of see a little bit of darkness in there too. And that's the thing about image prompts is you get a little tainted by your view of the image too. But I just think this is worded very beautifully, extremely mm-hmm. eloquent word choices.
I agree. Very nicely said. And I believe this is a pre-write. Which I find the fit to the prompt astonishingly apropos, really fit well with the imagery that she chose. I also the wealthy hills jeweled with the creeping flocks. She does wear the flowers, but painfully as her own. Adornment, her own makeup, standing in stark contrast against showy wildflowers. Agreed. Very, very apropos. Naomi, what did you think of this piece?
Oh, I thought this was so well worded. Like Faziana said, like all our senses are just awakened through this piece, whether it be our sight, our scent, our you know, everything is just blown like wide awake here. You know, the pine needles, the grapes, the lilacs, the smells, and then he has all the colors like the golden crown, and then and the emotions, you know, the waving softly breeze and the dancing slow waltz. It's just so beautifully put together, this piece. It's just amazing, amazing, amazing.
Thank you. Great comment. Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was beautifully written and a great choice of a pre-write for her to line up with that prompt 10. It worked really well. I think, Afasiana, you were really had good instinct with that when you commented on the line, the fiery pathos of passion spilling gracefully, and how it was beautiful, but there was this kind of darkness, and maybe it was the imagery, and that probably had something to do with it. But the thing also is that pathos actually means something that evokes a sense of sadness. So by putting that word in there, she really changes the meaning of everything else. I think that kind of is a very important word to consider in that phrase. I like how she uses imagery, and this is really beautiful throughout, but I really like the imagery of fleshy leaves waving slowly in the breeze, dancing a slow waltz. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I really liked was how she went with untamed grapes instead of wild grapes. You know, I like that she switched things up a bit there, braids of untamed grapes, because you could see somebody saying wild grapes. We always say that, wild flowers, wild grapes, you know. And to go with untamed kind of gave it a darker, more mystical feel. So really a clever write all the way through and very well done.
Great, great perceptions, great catches, great comment. I agree that the changing of phrases makes quite a difference in the way that the piece reads, especially the word with a pathos in the last stanza. So thank you. That was a great comment. So what have you got for us next?
All right. And Naomi, I put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. I had a SoundCloud.
Well, unfortunately, none of the SoundCloud got to Dean, and so they didn't get in.
No, it's okay. Okay, this is called The Edge. The edge of the cliff is but a footstep away. The spitting waves crash rocks, screaming my name. The cutting wind, salty and grim, slides on my face. Dead man's fingers clawing my neck. I take that step forward, staring downward into hell. Sharp, rock-sharpened, pointed ends, or a line of jagged razor knives. My haunted inner self whispers, choose, choose, choose. Upon the moonlight, I hear the rain drumming. There is no artistry in being killed by the tip. It should be done by the edge of the blade. And I sway sideways, drifting horizontally away from the edge, letting myself fall to the pounding of my shuddering heartbeats.
Wow. I'm gonna take the liberty of making first comment. This is a stunning write. I mean, the visual imagery just draws you into and your interpretation of the prompt is, first off, is quite imaginative, and the tale you've told about this young woman standing right on the edge of a precipice, contemplating what to do. My haunted inner self whispers, choose, choose, choose. And then your last stanza just blew me away. This is obviously very, very dark, but very, very visceral, but a very compelling light in the storytelling. So very well done, Naomi. And by the way, you read beautifully.
Thank you.
Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I really liked this. I have to agree with you, Bobby. It did have a visceral feel to it. It was also highly emotionally charged, I felt, especially with lines like the cutting wind, salting grim slides on my face, dead man's fingers clawing my neck. Dead man's fingers clawing my neck really gives a sense of guilt, like, you know, like feeling guilty over someone else's death, not necessarily because you killed them. Maybe there were things left unsaid, you know. I also like my haunted inner self whispers, choose, choose, choose. Upon the moonlight, I hear the rain drumming. There is no artistry in being killed. You know, it brings the emotion of the pounding rain and the falling tears. And that sense of sorrow and that sense of guilt that's found within the rite, just beautiful and haunting and thought provoking and very well done, Naomi.
Thank you, Pam.
Indeed, Faziana, your thoughts?
The choose, choose, choose definitely added to the intensity of the repetition. But I think for me, my favorite part was there is no artistry in being killed by the tip. It should be done by the blade. I think it's in quotation marks, so I'm not sure if that's referencing if someone else had said that or if it's something that you're saying within it. But I think it fits so well here. You know, the being stabbed not enough. You gotta be the gradual the. God, my sword fighting brain is not working. The slashing is a totally different experience than the poking. So I think that part, it just has an absolute beauty to it, and it's subtle and brutal at the same time, and it goes so well with all of the mentions of the jagged razor earlier on. That ending just gave me goosebumps. Very well done.
Thank you, Afeziana. And to answer your question, that's taken, well, it's changed up a bit, but it's taken from the book Dune. Do you know Dune?
Yes.
I do.
Yes,
Dune. Yeah.
There we go.
Well, the movie just out. That's an awesome book to read, I'm telling you. The descriptions in that, and you just swim in that book. And anyway, that's kind of twisted, but it's inspired by a quote that's in that book. Yeah.
Well done. Drawing from a Hugo and Nebula Award winner. You can't go wrong with that. That's a great inspirational draw. Well done. Thank you. What else you got for us, Pam? Oh, we got
Faziana. All right. Faziana, your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right. This was written like 5 minutes before the show because I realized I hadn't written anything before it. So I apologize for the rushed poem. Cardinal Rule by Faziana. Corruption takes root in the presence of blind trust. Users and abusers feel no need to adjust, as their victims are left to combust. The cardinal rule of survival is to watch for deceivers' arrival, but we can't help but love our rival. End poem.
And now you said you wrote it 5 minutes before the show, just so you could make us all jealous, right?
Yeah.
That's what you wrote in a hurry. God help us all. That was ended. Seriously, I wish you'd had that as an entry because that is a brilliant brevity. I looked at that picture and I thought, I wonder where someone's going to go with this, because the Cardinals are so positive, and you've got but you've got the blindfold with trust on it, and then the roots coming from her shoulder and her head, and I was looking at that going, you know, I can't wait to see what someone does with this. And you do not disappoint, girlfriend. This was really, for a quick a dash off, this is just brilliant, bloody brilliant. Pam, what did you think?
I really like how Afasiana went with this. Because there's always something positive about birds. And then, I mean, oh my goodness, the fact that you like whipped it up in about 5 minutes, very cool. You know, there are something positive about birds, but these birds, like, well, for example, the cardinals oftentimes represent a religious figure. And so you kind of see this idea of the abuse from people that you trust, like such as people who are supposed to be leaders in churches. You know, who are supposed to be there for your spiritual well-being, but instead are deceivers and betrayers. And I do really like that you went with the title Cardinal Rule, because I think when you do a brevity like this, you have to have the title be almost part of the poem itself. You know, and it's really how... to me, about how unfortunate it is that people turn to survival because on their own, to depend on themselves, or only be able to feel like they can trust themselves because they've learned from past abuses that people can't be trusted. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Definitely. And that first line where he takes root, and there's the roots on the picture, in the presence of blind trust and the blindfold with trust across it. What a brilliant catch. And interesting that you talk about a cardinal rule of survival, and they portray two male cardinals in that picture. That's not a couple. That's two rivals. And you say, we cannot help but love our rivals. So the elements that you laced into that are just amazing. Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, I'm so jealous, like you said. I can write something and then I tweak on it and I pull on it. And, you know, by the time it ends up in a con, and it read in a contest, it's totally changed from what I first entered. I can work over a piece for like 2 or 3 weeks and to write this like in like, what, 10 minutes before the show? Oh, my gracious, I'm so jealous. Yeah, this is just an amazing take on that prompt. It's just all the elements are just entwined into this. It's just a amazing piece. Afasiana, just bravo here for this write. Wow.
Great comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, who's up next? Did you have a piece in here?
All right. Up next, I'm going to put Patchwork by Emma J. Cool. And Bobby, will you give that a read for us, please?
I would be very pleased to do that. Patchwork. Paper-thin bisque porcelain limbs and one pendulous glass eye catapulted from a wind-whipped Millau viaduct apex, and I probably murdered that, swallowed whole by vert valley digested with a river's sigh. Mismatched jigsaw, osseous, and river rock shredded latex. Upchuck melange leftovers, donated to science with pride. Picked by herds of biped scavengers with white nylon nets, swooned over categorical heaps, the art of suicide. Painstaking diligence delivers epithet silhouettes. Jumbled junk, held together by glue and aluminum wire. Smoking silicon hodgepodge and haphazard neural pathways. Good as new, proclaimed with zero ironic quantifier. Brain dead smile, slant and ring finger twitch on unique time delays. Staggering, shuddering, clumsy, toddling perambulation. Wobbling monstrosity, slurred speech on stilts, swerving down the hall. Destabilization drowned by observant adulation. Electrical discharge sparks the fall of Tarn's first patchwork doll. End poem. Wow. Pam, what did you think of Emma's piece?
I have to say, she just has wonderful use of imagery and extremely thought-provoking. I see this as a very layered, like my first thought was, as I was looking through it, was there was this whole idea overdoing plastic surgery for the sake of pride and for staying young, and that how it, you start to wonder, you know, how much of the real them still actually exists. And then it almost, because it mentioned the art of suicide, painstaking diligence delivers epithet, that silhouette, there's almost this idea you wonder if it was a failed attempt at suicide and someone put back together. But then it can also, on a metaphorical level, the whole thing work really well for the idea of how much we wish we could tear ourselves apart and put ourselves back together, of how much we really despise each individual piece of ourselves. I really like good as new proclaimed with zero ironic quantifier, brain-did smile, slant and ring finger twitch on unique time delays. I like how that gives the whole idea of that of a glitch, almost as if you could see yourself as a glitch, as, you know, in the slurred speech on still swerving down the hill. That really, to me, has that line right there particularly stands out in the whole idea that there's such a sense of loss of control. And I just think this is a beautiful and thoughtful write, and it was very well done.
Wow, fantastic comment. Faziana, what did you think of Emma's piece?
When I read the line, swallowed whole by Vale Valley, I was thinking about it as, like, the grass is greener on the other side, which kind of worked with Pam's, like, plastic surgery angle of things. And digested with a river's sigh is such an amazing phrase. I really enjoyed the whole thing, but the where is it here? I've lost my place. I related it to it a little bit too much with the haphazard neural pathways, and then Pam was just talking about it, where there's the delay, where it's like you're glitching.
The time delay.
There it is. I had that after my brain bleed. My left side always had like a 2-second time delay compared to the other side, and it made things very destabilized, as it says later on, with electrical discharge sparks. That can be like, you know, nerve problems as well. That leaves you a wobbling monstrosity. I mean, this feels too real for me. Even though I think it's not supposed to be taken literally, I'm like, wow, this is me. But it's written with such a fantastic vocabulary and just gorgeous phrasing, even though I find it very disturbing just because I am this person.
But this is relatable. Wow.
It's relatable.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I agree. There's the visual imagery is quite profound, and Emma does have a wonderful command of the language. Mismatched jigsaw osseous and river rock shredded latex osseous being something that has been turned to bone or ossified, being turned to bone, and the different takes that that you and Pam have on this are just I think quite perceptive. That you can take this as a failed attempt at suicide or a failed attempt at plastic surgery, tinkering with oneself. And if you study the picture, the prompt, the wire that's holding the pieces together, it would be the images. Right eye is it's. And there's one eye there and one that's wound into the wire, which is really subtle on this piece of artwork. But there's some good as new proclaimed with zero ironic quantifier, brain dead smile. There's a multitude of phrases in here that you could cherry pick and have a great time. Destabilization drowned by observant adulation. And the last one, the electrical discharge sparks of the fall of Tarn's first patchwork doll. Her author's note says, the Milio, forgive me, I'm probably butchering that for the first speaking of the audience, viaduct refers to a bridge in France that crosses Gorge Valley and the River Tarn. So there's the reference to Tarn's first patchwork doll, which I thought was quite subtle. Naomi, what did you think of this piece?
Yeah, well, I read into it a totally different thing. I took a reference. Yeah, this is great about this piece because you can take it in different ways. I took it there's science in it, and then yes. There's the suicide. And then after there's she's swivering down the hall, and then there's electric discharge and the wires, you know. So I took it as mainly a mental patient in a hospital that has went through a lobotomy and had electrical charges, and you know that left them, you know, like half there, like all. You know, their brain, and they're not there anymore, you know. So that's what I read into this, right?
Great comment.
It's wonderful. Isn't that amazing?
Thank you. That was great. And isn't it amazing how each of us took Emma's piece and found something unique and able to be perceived in a different way? And Afasiana found it personally relatable, which I'm sure is going to blow Emma away. A great, great piece, Emma. Great comments, everyone. Let's see what else we got on the docket here. What else we got up next?
All right. Up next, we have The Sirens of the Seas by Sonia 3902Z. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read.
Great.
And it goes like this. Sailors, take warning before you set sail. Say a prayer that your ship will survive. The oceans swell, and take heed that the danger does not only lie above, but also beneath the blackness of the fathomless sea, where the sirens exist only to beckon poor men to their watery graves. They are the temptresses with flowing dark hair who sing their daunting songs along the rocky shores, tempting seamen to join them far below where briny seas swallowed them whole and turned them into skeletons of the deep. Do not hearken to these alluring creatures for they will hypnotize you with their mournful refrain, forcing you to jump ship into your aquatic prison forever, entombed within the shadowy realm of the sirens of the sea. End poem.
Great read. Great read. And, the prompt, what a brilliant take on the prompt. It is prompt 19, the face of a young woman, beautiful, youthful, sprinkle of freckles across the bridge of her nose and her face, sea green eyes, like the color of Kate Winslet's eyes. And beneath her is a huge wave with, you can see a man in a life preserver fighting the ocean. What a marvelous take on the prompt. I really enjoyed this. The sailors take warning. I'm looking for the fathom of the danger does not only lie above, but also beneath the blackness of the fathomless sea, where the sirens exist only to beckon poor men to their watery graves. And the tempest with flowing dark hair who sings their daunting songs. This is she's taken the prompt and woven it almost into the story of the sirens from Ulysses. And I believe that's the Odyssey, isn't it? That Homeric tale. But she's done a great job of weaving the mythology from that story to the take on the prompt. So well done on that. And Naomi, what did you think of this piece?
Yeah, she took a high agree. This is a wonderful take on that picture. I love the sentence, briny seas swallow them whole and turn them into skeletons of the deep. Skeletons of the deep. That's wow. That's a wonderful way to put it, you know. This is wonderfully worded throughout. Just an amazing right here.
There's
so many beautiful lines. So bravo.
All the more amazing because as I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. All the more amazing because it is a pre-write. So talk about
fitting that.
Yes. Yeah. She's had it out there a number of times, but it is an
5 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. Pam, what did you think of this piece that you read?
Well, I really like that she delves into the mythology of the sirens and that this is a dark seafaring tale of caution, of to ignore that voice of temptation because it's only going to lead to your downfall. So really just an excellent write and very well done.
Agreed. Faziana, what did you think?
I loved it. And I think as a pre-write, I can't believe how well it fits. I agree. I loved prompt 19. That was my one that I considered writing to. And I may still end up writing to that because I love that image. And I think that choosing sirens for that image was a brilliant connection. I kind of wonder if there's a bit of a double entendre with the ocean swell. It's like, you know, there's these sirens and then the ocean swells, as perhaps the men do, in response to the beautiful sirens, and then take heed that that is dangerous, that things can come from that, and the danger is also from below. So the men may think that they're in control, but they're not, and this woman is a threat. I found that really an interesting way. Several times she phrases things in like a gorgeous but dangerous kind of fashion, and that makes sense because the sirens, you know, they're beautiful and they have the beautiful song, but then they are dangerous. So their mournful refrain it ends up being mournful for the people who give into it too. I thought this was very, very well done and a really good choice for a pre-write. It fits Prompt 19 perfectly.
It does indeed. Well, thank you. Great comments, everyone. Pam, what have we got up next?
All right. Up next is The Phantom Piper Part 3 by Teresa S. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Okay. The Phantom Piper Part 3. They called to the Phantom Piper dance. To this tune that we play on our pipes. But she said to the sea with her mist, I must go to look through the clouds so low lying down. As the mists wrap around some gray-colored crag that veil the pale waters so still and so calm. The pale waters so still and so calm. They call to the phantom piper, sing to this tune that we play on our pipes. But you said to the men with their tears, I must go to gather them up and make skies for of rain. As the rainbows appears through a cloud-torn sky, see the woman from the northlands, she plays on her flute. The woman, she plays on her lute. They call to the phantom piper, die, to this tune that we play on our pipes. But she said to the green-shoed poets, I go. They draw me a fine, bright picture to weave. So with the sun and the eagle shall I now walk on this earth. And fair companions to me they shall be. Fair companions to me they shall be. End poem.
Great read. Great job. Okay, Fiona, would you like to start off the comments?
This almost felt like a song. Like the I liked the way that it had the repetition of they called to the phantom piper. And then they have, there's like a title for each of the stanzas in a way. There's a structure here that it sticks to, and that works really, really well. To this tune that we play on our pipes gets repeated, and there's this sense of consistency, almost like the waves. It's supposed to be still and calm and predictable, these waves, and that's what it is. The different stanzas, even when the words are different, have that kind of like flow of the size of their lines. It structurally works that in a way that fits the words of the poem. And I was a little bit surprised by how happy the ending was. With the fair companions to me they shall be, I was kind of expecting things to go darker there at the end. But I thought it was very well done, and I'd definitely like to read more by this poet.
I agree. I wish she had. I was scanning quickly through the artwork. And there's at least three prompts that have water in them. I can only suppose that she is referring meant this piece to refer to prompt 19 also, but without any kind of notation on the bottom. It's an exercise for the reader. But it is a beautiful piece. I mean, it's got a classic structure to it. The wording and the rhythm of it, especially the way Naomi read it, is beautifully done. And I agree with you. I'm going to go looking for her and see what parts one and two look like and if there's a part four. But you're right. It did have a very positive ending to it. Naomi, what did you think of this? Oh, I did ask you. Sorry. Well, you can tell me again if you like. I'm sorry. Pam, What did you think of this piece?
I thought this was really thought-provoking. I do like, too, how it has kind of a lyrical quality to it. And what I like is there's this idea that society is telling this phantom piper everything they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to dance, when they're supposed to sing, when they're supposed to die. And there's no sense that this phantom piper has any sort of self, like, like there's no, it's almost like they're a slave to other people's whims. And then at the end, I think the positive twist is really quite spiritual in the idea that they command this phantom piper to die, and she does, but she knows that when she dies, she is free. The chains have been broken, and she will be dancing and singing and rising up with the sun and the eagle. I think this is just really a powerful and thoughtful rite and very well done.
Right, there is a spirituality to it. And if it weren't for the last stanza or the way where they say they call to the phantom, I would think, I could almost think of the phantom piper as death and people calling to death, dance and sing. But the last stanza draws you away from that conclusion.
Absolutely.
Naomi, did you get the comment, or was I mistaken?
No. This was such an enchantment to read this. I just love rites like this that have, like, almost have an internal melody about them, you know, that they read so well. And this, strangely, maybe it's my twisted mind, but, you know, when Pam commented there about society, they're saying dance, sing, die. Well, before I was kind of taken towards, you know, the did you ever see the video clip of Another Brick in the Wall?
Where they have the
kids and they're all, you know, lined up and they're going over these straps that are moving. And they're falling into a meat grinder, and they're all coming out the same way. Like society has formed them to be all in the same mold there, and mold them all the same way. So this made me think of that video strangely. And then, you know, at the end she says, "No, I'm not taking this. I'm going away. I'm just gonna be like an eagle there and the sun, and I'm just going to, you know, go away on my own and be myself." So that's where it took me. It took me to strange places anyway. But this was a wonderful, wonderful rite. I so enjoyed reading this. So thank you so much, Teresa.
Thank you, Naomi. Interesting take on that, on the piece of poetry. Great comment. Okay, who have we got up next?
All right. Up next we have Last Frontier by Babbler. And Afasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
Last Frontier by Babbler. They gave Sally Ride 100 tampons for a week in space, $10,000 per pound to auto-eject from the surface of a blue sphere, infiltrate the void between orbs, touch galactic dust, discover the last frontier, and they gave Sally Ride 100 tampons for a week in space. They sent themselves 30 pounds heavier, with papers touting qualifications from institutions proudly issuing papers to those who met stringent qualifications, pale with a penis. Who can argue with a piece of paper? pressing moon boots into Luna's pockmarked face, piercing it with a flag, scraping bits away, pap smear for a planet. Even Luna has a man on her. We laughed. We can't argue with a piece of paper. Make dinner. Sit the kids down to watch a small step for man. Buckle up them boots. Burn a bra. Leave home to protest for the right to pay for a piece of paper. So they still send men into space. Best be back in time for dinner, ready to serve up the nighty nightcap, nightly nightcap, and a smile. Always a smile. How many tampons add up to 30 pounds? How many equals a penis? Is space really the last frontier if we're coughing up $140 a pop to launch tampons into space? End poem.
Well read. Great reading on that. My God. Pam, what did you think of Babbler's interpretation of this particular prompt?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have to say, this is great. It's, you know, it's dark, it's clever, it's humorous. It's a really great sardonic look at the inequality in so many areas of work, jobs, and education. You know, it makes me think, even though it's not mentioned, because it brings up, you know, tampons, and, you know, menstruation, it makes me think how in third world countries, there's a lot of women who have to skip days of going to school or going to work because they don't have proper feminine protection, you know. And because people don't feel like they need to invest in a woman's education, in a woman's, you know, ability to move forward. I love the question at the end, and you know, $140 a pop to launch tampons into space, and it ends with a question. And I also really like how many tampons add up to 30 pounds, and how many equal a penis. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's just all about what's convenient for them. You know, this is just really a clever write all the way through. And I like how she refers to the moon as Luna, and even Luna has a man on her. Really
yes.
Great write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Great comment. Naomi, what did you think of this piece? Naomi, are you with us still?
Let me check.
It says in the chat she had to go.
Oh, nope. Yeah, she had to go.
Did we lose her? Oh, okay, yep. All righty. Well, Faziana, did you read this? What did you think of it?
I love it. I had just read a thing about that because I guess someone wrote a song recently about all of those tampons that someone thought that she needed, and it's been kind of going around social media. So I just posted a link to where someone was debating about whether it was true, and their conclusion is that based on what they found, she didn't actually take those many tampons up, but NASA did ask her, will 100 be enough for the week? So it's kind of a true story. they wanted to give her that many, even though they didn't actually. And it just shows the ridiculousness of men not understanding women's bodies. And, you know, like someone said, I think Emily just said, or Emma just said on the board, even the moon is getting violated by men. He just have to, you know, be on top of it. My favorite part is pap smear for a planet. Scraping the bits away. Pap smear for a planet. That is classic Babbler right there. That's
yes,
quotable.
It is.
I think this is amazing. I love Babbler's sense of humor. She definitely had fun with this one, and I think she really brings up some true points. Like, you know, the, like this isn't just her making stuff up. It actually was a thing where men weren't sure if 100 tampons were going to do for Sally Ride. So it's something to think about.
Well, they think that she was going to do, string them together and escape? Yeah, it's, you got to wonder sometimes. And it's strange. That's something that I was just having a conversation with someone the other day about the very same topic, is that it's for some reason we don't talk about it. I mean, everybody knows about it, but no one talks about it. And it's like it's an off-limits subject, and people talk around it and use euphemisms, and some of the euphemisms I absolutely hate, and how you get how women very often, and fortunately I think this is changing, I hope, but how we would get our anger, our mood or something being, what is it, your time of the month, what are you on the rag? You know, comments like that, nowadays I think would get someone probably knocked down in the street and pummeled repeatedly, and deservedly too. But this is, yeah, this is typical babbler, and her irreverent treatment of the subject just indicates that it's got to be factual, because no one could make something this preposterous up. will 100 be enough? It's just astonishing to me sometimes how ignorant the male species can be of us still occupy the same planet. And some of the cultural, like Pam was remarking, some of the cultural observances of this particular time, you get everything from being celebrated to being sequestered. So it's really, really quite remarkable. But she did with this prompt. When I put that up, I was wondering what direction it was going to go in. And every time I wondered that, I got surprised and pleasantly so. So I think this is a brilliant piece. Well done, Babbler. Well done. Okay, what have we got next on the menu?
All right. Well, I tell you, if anyone ever decides to send me to space during that time of the month, they better supply me with wine, chocolate, and salt and vinegar potato chips. That's all. And
it's
a couple
good to have
packets.
Priorities. I'm glad you have priorities.
Exactly.
I don't care what time of the month it is. That sounds good.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it does actually, no matter what time of the month. You're right there, Faziana.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Up next, we have Please Don't Wake Me by Thomas B. And Bobby, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Glad to. Please Don't Wake Me by Thomas B. You came before the sun awakened me, acted as if sleep was for drowning, and I was in need of rescue. Somehow the plunge your own thoughts took left me beached, and you adrift in a dream only you could awaken. How quietly the light crawled across the covers, stole along your features, sparkled on the edge of the smile you had tucked away for me to discover. You have a habit of surfacing just long enough to maintain a pretense. Being awake seems to steal your sense of aliveness. Dreams tangled in fantasy, metaphysics articulated in the nod of a head, a trance holding your compatriots mesmerized. Haunted, you pull the covers up to the chin, turn away from the traitorous window, push against me as if you could melt into my flesh and never have to be more than my dream. I can hear the woodpeckers insistently knocking. Coffee calls and you groan, tell me I am cruel, ask for plenty of cream. End poem.
Hello? Are you there, Bobby?
Yeah, I said end poem.
That was all we heard. We didn't hear you ask for comments.
Oh no! I said end poem. I was I'm sorry. I'm all right. World's all wrong. Okay, Pam, please, your comments, your thoughts.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting how some poems can be both romantic and sad at the same time. I like this all the way through, but especially how quietly the light crawled across the covers, stole on your features, sparkled upon the edge of the smile you had tucked away for me to discover. I like the idea of the morning light, you know, and looking at somebody and waiting to discover their smile. And the idea that there's almost like dreams tangled in fantasy, metaphysically articulated in the nod of a head, a trance holding your compatriots mesmerized. I don't know, you feel like there's almost this idea, and to me anyway, of that the person is there, but at the same time kind of lost you in their own world. I did like the double entendre of asking for plenty of cream. I thought there was a really nice touch of sensuality there and throughout this rite. Just really a beautiful and thoughtful rite and very well done.
Agreed. Epasiana, what did you think of this piece?
I liked it. My favorite part was somehow the plunge your own thoughts took left me beached and you adrift in a dream only you could awaken. And then I really like when it says being awake seems to steal your sense of aliveness. There's something about like the fantasy and the dreams that felt more real than real life. And to have to wake up and face the world makes you feel less alive, and there's an irony there, but I think it's really well developed. This is a beautiful piece.
It is beautiful. I agree. Somehow the plunge your own thoughts took left me beached, and you adrift in a dream that only you could awaken. That beautiful passage, and it is interesting. I agree with the comments that it does seem sort of melancholy, sad, and still very emotional and intimate in the way that you're not quite sure if the person is there or isn't there. So I think that was a great catch on your piece, Pam. You don't know whether this is... But I toward the end think that this is someone who is right next to them, and they're wrestling with waking up. Tell me I am cruel, ask for plenty of cream. It's like they're struggling for consciousness, and boy, do I know how that feels in the morning. I get so deeply asleep that the only thing that woke me up this morning was my cat getting right next to my ear and going, meow! Like, I'm awake. This is a beautiful piece, though. Really, please don't wake me. Great title. Great take on the prompt. I looked at that and I thought, all of this artwork, as I posted it, I was wondering what people's imaginations, where it would take them. And this has been that was a beautiful take on this particular prompt. Okay, we've got Passage by Bobbing.
All right, and up next we have Passage by Bobbing, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. In the expression, especially consider the style, voices, gestures, essence, and ambiance, the ingredients. How does this fruitation taste? Then analyze elementally, divining beyond providence, early whirling icy zephyrs, the window waves in the wind. Should the plug be pulled? Too blasé? compelling counterwise in the upheaval sequel. Her four fur smeared the inner face and licked curls where she could reach Hallmark in frozen glares unbroken by bro and foe, anticipating her longest bewilderment culmination. God bless loose ends, be damned. Some should not tie, others will never fly. Anonymity, esoteric disembodiment of footless paths, no tracks, nullifies a legacy. Her composition was improvised, generatively from ancient interactions. The personality spilled spaciously by a trillion karmic cups. She had naught to do with her quintessence, yet the constitution of her components, psychosocial, socially, and dare it be said, extra-dimensionally instates unicity. Her neck and shoulders were sore, as if wrenched deep down inside. She loosed the transtemporal clasp to feel hauntingly anything, no, nothing. What can the matter be? Where can her matter be? She is not locked in. She is locked out. The pain was phantom. She had been hewed from herself, deserted and lost, within her own thoughts, on another dissolutive plane, side by side, up and down, a new role in the initial rationale. Temptation fights a moment more for speculation, but yields to loneliness. Hello? Afterlife? Limbo? Primordial vibrations of cosmic ether inform the universe with energy transcending human fundamentals and commandments. Elizabeth is reuniting and igniting telecephalon communications, fulminating fusions. She is complementing creation. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome. End poem.
Great read. Great read. Start the comments of Faziana. What did you think of Bobbin's piece?
It's really interesting. I liked Footless Paths, No Tracks, Nullifies a Legacy. And I found it really interesting the way that the poem is physically shaped. Like, it seems intentional the way that the stanzas are arranged. Like, there's some, I don't even know what you call it, a reverse pyramid. It's like a funnel for a lot of it. Like from her composition down to insinuates unicity, it's each line gets a little bit shorter. I like that there are questions in it. Hello? It's not just hello. It's the question of, like, are you there kind of thing. Afterlife, limbo, there's this uncertainty in it. It's like there's, like, the unreliable narrator where you don't quite know what's going on. I like that.
Great comment. I agree that the format is interesting. It is it's by design, obviously, but I can't see any design to the design. You're right. It does have a way of ebbing and flowing. Pam, what did you think of this piece?
Yeah, I too really like that she went with the centered stanzas, and it kind of had a form, a shaping form. I got the impression that the one part was supposed to have been sung because the music notes were by it, but unfortunately, I wasn't even going to try to guess exactly how they wanted it sung. But I like this all the way through. I like how it has that sci-fi vibe, and it really seems to be about someone's struggle to understand the world, to come to terms with all that is out there. And there really is, when it goes into where they're saying hello, and there's really this sense of loneliness. Like, I like how it's a story, but at the same time, it touches on the idea how we as a society are becoming farther and farther apart from being able to connect with one another. So just really a thoughtful write and very well done.
agree. I think it's very complex, right? Very layered, very philosophical. I think it's deeply philosophical. By the way, the tune that you were struck, oh, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Is that anything you heard as a child?
Oh, did he put that in his A.N.?
Probably not. Okay. But I just recognized it. It's, you know, what can the matter be, Johnny, so long at the fair? Oh, dear, what can the matter be,
okay.
so long at the fair?
I totally,
I
never heard
you know
that
me.
Song before. I just didn't connect it.
Oh, my weird memory. But, that particular portion of it, what can the matter be, where can her matter be? She's not locked in, she's locked out. I thought that was right in the center. I thought that was really interesting statement on the status, and it transitions. It gets deep down inside to feel haltingly anything, know nothing. What can the matter be? Where can her matter be? And then the pain was phantom. She had been hewn from herself, deserted and lost within her own thoughts on another dissolute plane, side by side, up and down. I thought that this particular piece, the interpretation of the prompt was inspired. I looked at that and I thought, this one's not going to be an easy one to write to. And lo and behold, we got a piece that is very complex, I think very cerebral, I think a splendid take on the prompt. So thank you, Bobbing, and thank you for a great read, Pam. And we're just ripping right through them. How many more do we have left? Oh, we got Peter Solway. Please don't ask me to read that one.
thankfully, it's not your turn, because if it was your turn, I would have asked
Yay!
You. But we have Marguerite for Me by Peter Solway and Aphasiana. Would you give that a read for us, please? Maybe. Did she drop
yeah,
through?
No, I'm here. I'm just
okay.
Was muted and then looking to see if there was anything I didn't know how to say, because Bobby was scaring me with her trying to get rid of it. Because I will trip on my words as well. All right, Peter, let's see what you got for us. Peter Solway's poem, Marguerite for Me. Painter of timeless patience, married seemingly contentedly, Georgette, happy to strip off, remains still, painted with oils, slow to dry and seal, no children to interfere, Christmas of interruptions. An artist's order, universe of exceptions, stretched Belgian linen and ideas wisdom. Georgette reminding, maybe roast burning, slip on a gown, yes, Renee, paintings never ending. But snap and print, steal a glimpse, modern commercialism, sunrise virgins triumphant, pouting models done by evening. But Renee, content. Dog for walk at leashed length, tree of honest life to scent, emperor's avenue to litter, touch-ups after dinner, stars in the firmament, taking all night, Georgette at black singer, repeating herself. And poem.
Great read. And, of course, Peter did not share once again with us which prompt he wrote to, so I can not apply that to anything, except for some strange reason, I almost understood what was going on, which is frightening to me. Maybe there was something in that tea I didn't know about. This is an interesting piece. I get the sense that it takes place in France, although that's just a personal interpretation from the names, Georgette and Renee. But Pam, you're good with art and artists. Would you happen to know to whom Peter might be referring?
Oh, geez. I've heard of Marguerite, however you pronounce it, but I can't remember. Oh, I know. He's the one he's the surrealist artist that does the couple, the kissing couple with the cloth over their heads. That's who
yes,
he
that's
is.
The one.
Yes. Yes. You know, so
name agrees.
I had to think about it. Like, yeah. I recognize that name. And, you know, I like, you know, the, well, you know, this is really an intriguing and thought-provoking write. But, to me, it feels like, and I'm guessing Georgette was either a wife or a lover or something, because she's mentioned a couple times. And there's this kind of sense of them interacting. No children to interfere, a Christmas of interpretation. It feels like almost like they're getting away from everyone and everything. I like how all of a sudden he throws in there modern consumer commercialism, sunrise virgins triumphant, pouting models done by evening. Because Christmas is also mentioned, and with that line, it really does make me think about how easily we're persuaded to buy things, or how easily we're persuaded that, you know, if we truly care about ourselves, or we truly care about our family and friends, this is the gift that we will get them. I'm not sure, because Singer is capitalized, I don't know if that's a reference to like the Singer sewing machine, or perhaps I think there is a famous person, whether it's an artist or not, with the last name Singer. I can't remember his full name, but there is an artist with the last name Singer. And he tended to paint a lot of, I think, landscapes, if I remember right, and people. He painted a lot of women. I like how this says stars in the firmament taking all night. It feels like to me like this whole idea of the rich and the famous, you know, taking up all of that. I can't think of the right word, but you know what I mean? Like where there's those people who get forgotten because there's people that everyone feels shines brighter. Just really a thought-provoking write and very well done.
Yes, I think I have a guess. Were you referring to John Singer Sargent?
Yes, that's it.
As I think. Wasn't he the one that painted Whistler's mother? Or was that someone else? John Singer Sargent was an American painter, I believe.
Yeah, and he painted a lot of portraits of women.
Yes, he did.
Yes, and Whistler's mother, I believe, was actually a painting of his own mother, wasn't it?
I don't know. Let me quickly. By the way, if you look in the board, I found an answer to your query. Georgette was his wife.
Oh, okay.
I put a little note in there.
Uh-huh.
I've taken to doing that when Neutron and I work together. If there's something obscure in someone's verse, while we're listening to comments, I go scurry off to Google and look it up, and then I put the answer to it up on the board, so everyone gets a chance to share the knowledge. It seems to be working out well, too.
It does. So, it helps understand a poem more.
It does, because he's got, you know, otherwise there would be obscure references. But you, bless your heart, just rose to the challenge. You nailed it right on. So, Aphasiana, if you're not intimidated, plunge right in.
Oh, I am, but like to be honest, there would have been so much that I missed had I not listened to your comments, because I wasn't familiar with the painters. And as you were commenting, I did look it up. So I was looking at him and his wife and their art. And I was wrong about the singer because I was thinking about the sewing machine singer too. But I thought that this was really interesting, and now that I know all of these references, I think it's a very intelligent piece. For Christmas of Interruptions, that made me think, like, the interruptions are sometimes presents. It was happy that there were no children to interfere, but the interruptions I think that they had were, you know, they were painting nudes and then they would, you know, get distracted from their painting. So it was a Christmas of interruptions because they unwrapped, happy to strip off. That's how I interpreted that, is the Christmas of interruptions was every once in a while they had to unwrap and do more than paint, which just had kind of a whimsical, fun way of having that sensuality in there.
Well, that's a great interpretation. I love that you shared about it. By the way, you're not the only one who was. I totally missed the boat on that one. Whistler's Mother, which is formerly known as Arrangement in Gray and Black Number 1, was painted by James McNeil Whistler. So if it was his mother, yes, it was I was totally
okay.
off the mark on singer John Sargent.
Yeah, and I was slightly too, like, I knew the painting you were talking about, and I thought I had remembered it was the painter's mother, but I really couldn't even think.
You were right,
who the
though. It was Whistler, but Anna McNeil Whistler, and it was his mother. So you called that one right. I got the artist wrong, so totally. But we had an interesting because of Mr. Solway's a piece here. We had an interesting. Segue into artwork here, so a little thought provoking and interesting discussion. So how many pieces do we have left? We have about 14 minutes, not even that.
We're doing fine. We actually have two pieces left. Up next, we have Cardinalis, by Art Junkie. And Bobby, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Cardinalis by Art Junkie. A cardinal sings to me from his place in the pine tree, a two-parted whistle, high and clear in pitch, the song, then the refrain. Like his scientific name, Cardinalis, I trust him, though he has nothing to offer me but the beauty of his bird song. I live for its sound, wakefully listening, looking for the scarlet in the evergreen. End poem. And that was a different take on the piece that you, the prompt that you used to Faziana. So what did you think of this interpretation?
I thought it was nice. I like that it focused so much on the birds. And the description of it at the end there, scarlet in the evergreen. I like that because it is, you know, quite a shock to see the red bird contrasted with the evergreens and often in the snow. When I lived in Waterloo, Ontario, we had tons of cardinals, and it would be like snow everywhere, and then there'd be this burst of bright red. So it just made me think of that, the way that it was described. It's interesting that it gives the scientific name of the cardinal. I trust him, though he has nothing to offer me but the beauty of his verse of his bird song. That trust of him fits the painting with the trust across the eyes. Though he has nothing to offer me, so she's blind to the fact that there's nothing being offered, but she still feels that trust and just listens without necessarily getting to see, because it just talks about the beauty of the bird song, not the beauty of the visual, which we get to hear about, but it's maybe as that trust is blinding her, she only gets the audio. So it's like partial perception. I know it's one I have to think about a little bit more, but I enjoy it.
It was a great catch on your part that it speaks to only the auditory and not the visual, and especially since when it talks about the looking for the scarlet in evergreen, and in the prompt, the girl's sweater is evergreen. It's a green sweater with the cardinal sitting on the so it's an interesting contrast, especially since she's a redhead. But I liked your observation of this. Pam, what did you think of this piece?
I thought this was really beautiful. I always enjoy Art Junkie's poetry. This has a wonderful use of sound rather than focusing on imagery, as the Faziana brought up. I felt like this was very much about enjoying the sound of the bird, but there was a layer to it that I felt worked as a metaphor, and the whole idea that it's about trusting and loving somebody, like that. Like perhaps the cardinal was actually a metaphor for a partner or a lover, and especially with lines like "I trust him though he has nothing to offer me but the beauty of his bird song." I mean, it does definitely, without a doubt, work as the idea of listening to the cardinals, but it also works on the idea of trusting and loving someone even when they don't have much to offer you, and you don't have much to offer each other. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
A very perceptive comment on your part. I love listening to your comments because your insight always leads me to things that I would never have caught otherwise. So I appreciate what you have to say. And what's our last piece?
All right. Our last piece is Sunset Shades of Stillness by Slightly Fay. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. Sunset paints her in the passive body language of rust, coral pigments drenching a watercolor canvas of calm, implications sunk under the spent weight of this watershed moment, treading in her own fluid nature, cast in limpid pools of inertia, a quiet moment to quench her thirst, parting lips threaded in horizons of splintering silence. She dilutes self with the salinity of solitude, a slender stalk breaching the serenity held just below her surface, the tension of her frame, an upturned root seeking soil in which to settle, her weft weighted by dark waters, shoulders slacken in the stillness, seeking what is sought in silence. End poem.
Great read. And Faziana, we've got about 7 minutes. Let's see, what did you have to think about this piece?
I really liked the upturned root seeking soil in which to settle. To me, that's about like how we look for love in the wrong places. It's not going in a way that would nourish it, but expecting to find somewhere to put down roots. I thought that was a really deep stanza that could have a lot read into it.
And I was focused on the last stanza, her weft weighted by dark waters, shoulders slackened in the stillness, seeking what is sought in silence. The weft being a weaving term for the threads that are crosswise across the womb, or the loom, rather. So that reference also being to her face being parallel with the water's surface, I thought that was pretty interesting. Pam, you read it. What did you think of this piece?
I thought this just had wonderful imagery throughout. I like what you both had to say. And I like the use of the word weft, or weft weighted by dark waters. It feels like somebody who's just so extremely burdened. you know, that they're just trying to keep themselves above water and barely can. There really is just a sense of the whole weight of the world and one's own decisions weighing upon their shoulders. So really a powerful rite and very well done.
Yes. I see that we have some pieces that we haven't tackled yet, so I guess that's going to be a carryover for next week along with the cream of yesterday.
They were the,
Sorry?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, they were all sound clouds, and so I chose to save those for only if we needed them, and so we're going to carry them over so that you and so that Neutron will be able to get the sound clouds to fill.
Oh, you clever girl. You clever woman.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind,
well, thank you
I'd
for
like
that.
To promote some upcoming shows.
Oh, please do. Please do.
All right. Well, first of all, join us tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for The Art of Seduction with Gray Eye Smith and Louie Wildove. And then Afasiana, what contests do you have running for your upcoming shows?
On Thursday for Double Helix, we have Mind Games, Part 2. Part 1 was Mind Games with Yourself. Part 2 is Mind Games That Other People Play on You. And then for Part Sinner, Part Saint, which is Friday night / Saturday morning, we have some quotes from Babbler about the change in weather and how sometimes disasters can be beautiful or beautiful weather can be a disaster.
Oh, cool. I like those. Well, I have a few contests running, so always feel free to go to my page, check those out. Make sure to check out all the contests and topic boards by Late Night Poets, Hosts, and Hostesses. And then for Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme show, Intimidus Rex is running a contest with songs from Blondie as prompts. And great show tonight, Bobby. You go ahead, promote what you want to promote and wrap the show up as you see fit.
Well, I just posted today a contest that Neutron wanted me to work on. I finally got it done. It's called Anti-Social Media, How's Your Head? And it is about how the adverse effects of social media on relationships, self-image, your perception of other people, the marketing, the media, what have you. I've got some really, really interesting. I've already got a post. Oh, my God. I got a post. Bless her heart, Emma Cool. She's up here already. There's some interesting prompts out there, and some of them by people who are well-known, and some of them just by our favorite author, Anonymous. This should be an interesting one because there are some really interesting factoids out there about how social media is adversely affecting things. So one prompt, I think, says, don't do anything you basically wouldn't want printed on a bulletin or on a billboard with your face next to it. That was one today, and later on this week will be the Christmas contest, called the Santa Spinoff. Santa Spinoff.
That sounds good.
I didn't want to cough in everyone's ear. So Pam and Faziana, thank you so much for your support and Pam for your assistance, your technical support this evening. Appreciated it. And thanks for a great show and have a good night.
Thank you.